Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Coco and Daltz. We're real people bringing you real reviews of all the latest movies and TV shows that are streaming on Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus. And we also sometimes cover books and music. So whatever you're in the mood for pop culture-wise, we got you covered.
And occasionally we will also cover live the lineups at grocery stores.
Do we though?
No.
Oh, okay. So I'm not Daltz.
I'm not Coco.
And today we are bringing you our review of Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich. Hold on to your seats because this is not the usual murder and mayhem that's fictitious. This is actual IRL. Murder and mayhem.
And this does not take place overseas anywhere, although there are international plays in this. There are not a lot of subtitles, so this is sort of out of our comfort zone for the most recent stuff that we've been doing. This is actual, most of it took place in New York and parts abroad.
That's right. We, if you've been listening to our podcast, which I know you have, we watch a lot of stuff that's subtitled, and this is just about an American bad boy.
This is not Nordic noir.
No, it is not. So, Daltz, what is Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich about?
So, it is a four-part docu-series about Jeffrey Epstein, the accused pedophile and sex trafficker. He was the billionaire, of course. He was connected to a lot of people. He was connected and seen in public with Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton, Harvey Weinstein. Donald Trump. I shouldn't forget him. Et al. And was accused of luring young ladies in for the purposes of sex trafficking, sexual abuse, that sort of thing. Pretty serious dude. And the four-part series is essentially documenting a lot of what the victims went through. It's about an hour long for each episode, so you're looking at about 4 hours in total for binge watching. It's pretty bingeable, and it's a documentary. There's no dramatizations. It's all using real footage. It's using real interviews from the victims, and there is interrogation room footage with Jeffrey Epstein, who committed suicide in August of last year. So it's sort of a synopsis. To me, it's almost like a mini slice of this. I don't know, Coco, what are your thoughts on what it was, this docu-series?
Yeah, you said before we started recording that you felt like this was more to give the victims a voice than anything. And I would agree with that because it's four parts, but you don't really go much into Jeffrey Epstein's background at all. You really don't find out how he made his money. I mean, this guy had hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. How did he get that? He started off as like a teacher at a private high school in New York, where he was, I should mention, hired by the father of the current U.S. Attorney General, William Barr.
Wow.
So that's not shady. And he left that to be like a trader at Bear Stearns, and he got fired from there, and then he hooked up with some other place. And I'm like, in the 15 years that he was doing investment banking or whatever, how did he make that much money?
Yeah.
So I think they could have delved, like I said to Daltz before we started recording, the Madeleine McCann series last year, which we reviewed on our podcast and is somehow still getting downloads.
Still popular.
Even though it's a year old. That was an 8-part series that probably could have been 4 or 5 parts.
Yeah.
This was a 4-part series that could have been 8 because I feel like we could have gone more into his background. They could have gone more into his dealings with shady people, the conspiracy theories surrounding his death. Like, I understand you want to keep the focus on the victims, but this is such a huge, complex, tangled story, and I feel like there's a lot that could have been explored without shifting the focus. Like, the O.J. Simpson trial was about O.J. It wasn't about Ron and Nicole.
Right.
So, but you could have done that and kept the focus on the victims, I feel like.
I think we're saying the same thing, is that I don't think there was too much victim interviews, because I think that that was important, and I think there's a lot of for as awful as these situations were, where these girls were, were tragically underage when all these things happened, they were forced upon it. There were a lot of them were in bad situations, so they were disadvantaged in some way. So he was taking advantage. He was preying on them.
Right. Classic, classic choices for victims, like right. people who are disempowered and nobody's going to believe them.
Homeless or yeah. have a drug addict parent or something like that. So it was important to get those stories out, absolutely. And I think that there was, especially in this case, because of the way the first go-around with Epstein in court turned out, is that he got a sweetheart deal for some reason whatsoever in Florida and served minimal time. And there wasn't really, an appropriate acknowledgement of the crime that was committed. And the victims did not get a voice in that court hearing. So I think that the documentary does a good job at getting them out. I don't think that this is necessarily advocacy documentarianism, but it certainly leans in that direction, is you're giving them as much voice as possible. But I agree, and I think I mentioned this to you when we were watching it, is that I wanted to know more about him. Not that you're glorifying him or sensationalizing him or even deifying him in some way. It's just like, I want to know more background about this guy. Like, what makes this twisted mind? And why, mm-hmm. what were his parents like? What, you know, we heard about him teaching and he lied his way through one job and another and got into Bear Stearns lying and stole some money apparently from another guy he worked for. These things are talked about, but there's not really any sort of examination of it. There's not really any sort of deep, well, he grew up here and this is his upbringing and these are the schools that he went to and these are some of his classmates that he went to school with.
Right. Like, I didn't even know he had a brother until
right.
the end of episode yep. 4 when he killed himself and suddenly his brother is coming out of the woodwork and as a trustee of his estate or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, or he wants the suicide to be investigated because he doesn't believe it's a suicide. And I'm right. like, I didn't know this guy had a brother. Yeah. Like, where's this guy been for the past 3.5 episodes?
That's like, exactly what I thought too. When I saw this guy's face, I was like, well, wait a minute. Where has he been all along?
Right,
like,
totally.
I want to talk to him. I know that they tried to talk to him yeah. and they tried to talk to Ghislaine Maxwell, who was his girlfriend and also
slash
a neighbor.
Madam.
Yeah. Like she's, if all these things are true, is a nasty character as well, because she's preying on these girls just as much as he was. Absolutely. When I saw his brother, I was like, well, maybe he's got other siblings we don't know about. Maybe he's got a parent who's still alive. Like, we don't know any of this stuff. And so that was a hole to me. That was being a journalist and being looking at balance. I didn't really get a good sense of his character. And again, it's not like I want to sympathize him with him right. or anything like that. I'm not, or justify anything in any stretch of the imagination. I just want to know about this guy, because it was very much, to me, I wanted to know or get a better sense of motive, because this is a guy who was a billionaire, had an island in the U.S. Virgin Islands, had his own little island, had a helicopter, had all these properties around the world, had all the money he could possibly want. But how did he get that? And how did he stumble his way into all this wealth? Because it wasn't like he inherited it. He was a day trader or whatever it was that he was with Bear Stearns, and then all of a sudden he's a zillionaire. So there was a couple of leaps there that we made that I was just like, did we miss an episode? You know, or did I get up, go to the bathroom and we forgot to pause it or something like that? You know, like, it was, so there were a couple of holes there for me. So that holds it back for me in terms of making this you know, on the par with some of the other documentaries that we watched that we really like. But it was still, it's four hours long.
Right.
And it's a very important case. It's a very important, you know, situation. And with the way that the victims got completely hosed in the first go around, and then they got some justice the second go, at least some sort of meter of justice, because he killed himself, so wasn't ultimately held responsible.
Yeah, and he, like 2 days before he allegedly committed suicide, he changed his will and put all of his everything into a trust in the Virgin Islands, so they can't even try to get their hands on any of that to be
they
financially
can't get restitution on that.
Yeah, totally. So they, you know, you feel so sad and helpless and angry for these poor girls
right.
who have just been victimized for decades, some of them, like, and they just can't, you know, are they going to have closure? Like the,
right.
the one girl, Michelle, like, she's still so angry. You can just, like, feel it,
right.
like, coming off her. And there are other people who seem to have come more to terms with it, but...
And a lot of these women, this had happened to them 10 years ago. Like,
right.
a tremendous amount of time ago. So you can imagine mm-hmm. all this lack of justice, all this time for them. You can imagine how that's affected their lives. And then all of a sudden it comes up, and he's charged, and he's going in front of the court, and then now nothing. Like
yeah.
still, in some ways, he gets away with it again. You know, he was
yeah.
getting away with it all those years, and then now he's getting away with it again. And it's just, it's a really, It's an indictment of the system as well, because the system did not serve those girls well in the first go around. Mm-hmm. Two Jane Does, who are both identified in the documentary, come forward, and this was all born from a Vanity Fair story. So there's also a little bit of shenanigans going on at the Vanity Fair end, and this turned into a puffy Epstein profile rather than this guy's dodgy profile. But these two girls that came forward, I mean, that should have been enough. Why wasn't that enough?
So I feel like if you followed any of this case at all while it was ongoing, like when he got arrested and then when he died in prison.
So after, like, the Me Too stuff, the most recent part, yeah.
Like, I feel if you followed any of this story at all, the docuseries didn't really cover any real new ground for you, except for the Vanity Fair stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember reading about. So in the early 2000s, like maybe even 98, but I think it was around 02, 03, Vanity Fair, so the then editor-in-chief, Graydon Carter, went to one of his financial reporters and said, hey, I'm hearing rumors about this guy named Jeffrey Epstein, and he's a bajillionaire, and, you know, he's got this huge seven-story townhouse on, like, Fifth Avenue or whatever, and nobody knows where he got his money, and hey, can you dig into him? And she uncovers the two earliest known victims of this guy from, like, the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. And
Graydon, a good journalist, a good, you know, good result from that reporting.
Right. And then Graydon Carter wouldn't allow those girls' stories to be included in what ended up going to press. It just, like Dalt said, ended up being just this puffy, like, oh, this guy's a great investor and he'll make you a lot of money. And oh, he's a swinging bachelor. And, you know, of course, Graydon Carter released a statement to the documentarian saying, well, it did not meet our journalistic standards of integrity, and she only uncovered this right as we were going to press, so we couldn't include it. So that's
shady.
Yeah, but that was the only part of the docuseries that I don't remember hearing before. I don't specifically remember hearing the Vanity Fair aspect of it. Like, everything else, like, he abused dozens, if not hundreds, of girls, and he trafficked them, you know, to internationally, to London, to Paris, to his place in the Virgin Islands. Like, I'd heard all of that before, and that doesn't make it any less shocking. But if you know tangentially the story at all, like, you're not really going to learn anything new, I don't feel like.
Yeah, and I didn't. There were some things that I learned about it. I remember the Vanity Fair stuff. I remember following that, and Graydon Carter being a Canadian, I've been following his career a little bit to see how he's been doing. And I was really kind of disappointed the way he handled that at the time. I remember that. And as you and I were talking about, Coco, before the podcast, is that if you have a magazine such as that, you don't leave it to the last minute to be checking, you know, Jane Does and things like that. Like, oh, we didn't have the resources to turn it around. Like, no, if there's a story, there's a story. If you're any kind of journalist, if you're any kind of editor interested in putting the best product out, and something pops up like this, you're going to pull that story. You're going to put another story in that place.
Right. You've always got, like, a Renee Zellweger, feature in the can.
You've always got something that you can throw in there, especially when you're Vanity Fair. It's a monthly magazine. It's not like it's a daily newspaper when you're only got some, you know, even then. But it's not like it's a daily magazine where, oh, we got to get this out.
Right.
It's like, you've got a backup plan. You've you've got the months are planned in those magazines. For having worked at monthly magazines, you know that they're planned out, at least a skeleton plan for the next few months. So I didn't buy that at all. He said, well, we didn't have time to verify or anything like that. And if they hadn't met our editorial standards, which was three, then we would have, instead of two accusers. I was like, really? I mean, okay, then just give the writer another couple of months or weeks or whatever it takes to get in, because I'm sure there's another one out there.
Right. Or even, okay, so we only have these two girls, but did they tell anybody at the time? Did one of them say to one of their friends, like, oh my God, you're not going to believe what just happened to me. Like, okay, so now you've got, like, a third person who said, yes, at the time she told me that this thing had happened. So.
Independent corroboration. I mean, there's a lot of things that even just you and I sitting here thinking about it, they must have done that. They must have occurred to them. They must have, like, it's a professional magazine. You think that they would think of these things. So that to me seems like there was some behind-the-scenes shenanigans going on. So we have to get this puffy Jeffrey Epstein piece out into the magazine world because we've got an advertiser who supports him or something like that.
Right.
Because of all, like, his connections that Epstein had. Like, that's why he got off in the first go-around.
Right.
Is because he was a powerful guy. And all of a sudden, the state is making a deal that buries everything and then...
And he's on like house arrest, but they don't even check it. So you've got these PIs following him around. He's supposed to be at home like 6 days a week. And instead he's on his jet going to God knows where.
He was in New York and like he was all over the place.
And the PI is taking pictures of him outside of like the Intercontinental in South Beach. And he calls up the guy's parole officers and they're like, well, he's a celebrity. What can you do? Right. Like they don't care, you know.
It's just horrible, horrible things. And some of the things that the... that they did to the women in those instances. It was just reprehensible. It's unexcusable as a magazine for to put a bow on this kind of thing is that I don't buy any of that. And there's all sorts of that around this case. Like there's all sorts of, well, why didn't he do this? And why didn't this happen? And if somebody else had done this, then this would have happened. And it didn't happen. Like, you know, the charges that he got in the first go around were soliciting prostitution or something like that, which was a $100 fine typically or something like that.
They had like 45 girls
who
were saying like, yes, he abused me. Yes, he trafficked me. And they boiled it down to one count of solicitation of prostitution. And then he was able to, you know, 6 days a week, go home for 18 hours a day and pay a $100 fine. And he was angry about that.
Yeah.
Like they had a recording of him with a reporter from like the Miami Herald or something, and he was hardcore bitching about how, well, if this had happened in New York, you know, I wouldn't even have the $100 fine or whatever. And I'm like, this guy's got cojones.
Well, this guy is like, entitled and he's a narcissist, and that's what I got out of it.
And he's probably angry because he's got blackmail material on God knows how many people, which is why he's been able to skate on all this stuff for 30 years, and now he got popped.
Yeah.
And couldn't make it go away, and he's pissed.
Well, and there was all sorts of that in this story, and that was part of it. That was the charges and a quote unquote conviction in Florida. It all of a sudden just disappeared. And so you look at his sphere of influence. You look at the fact that Bill Clinton was on his plane 26 times, and going down to the island that he owned in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And I'm not implying anything. It's just a factual thing. So you look at. Excuse me, and you look at Prince Andrew was involved. He's a very powerful guy. You look at Harvey Weinstein. He was a powerful guy in those days.
He was up to his own no good,
right? And so those two paths are crossing there. Like that's the
right.
That's,
and Trump.
That's and Trump again, another powerful guy. So like all these spheres of influence crossing over. You know, somebody at some point stepped in for him and helped him skate in Florida or wherever it happened to be.
Well, I mean, if you just look at the current administration, he knows Trump.
Yeah,
Alex Acosta, the former labor secretary, was the U.S. attorney in Miami who gave him that sweetheart deal. Current Attorney General Bill Barr, his dad hired Epstein at the Dalton School in Manhattan in the 70s. So, I mean, that's three connections to the current administration. And, you know, there's people he's connected to whose names we don't know because they don't want their names known because they're that powerful. So,
and they're also powerful people that we don't. They're not celebrities or they're powerful in a different way. They're powerful in corporations or politically that we don't know anything about.
Yeah, banking, like behind the scenes. And, and they don't want their names known.
Or with oil companies or, you know, the things that really move the needle in this country in terms of getting things done, the lobbies and all that sort of
shady
stuff.
Royal families.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the British royal family, but.
Yeah. And so that to me is a fascinating aspect of the story is this unknown subculture, unseen subculture that is getting things done on behalf of the rich and the powerful. And it's so disheartening. And we're seeing that. I mean, as we do this podcast, we're seeing how the system has failed. There's riots in the streets in many of the cities in the country right now because the system failed in many ways. And so it's just another emphasis on how the system is only built for certain people, like all these poor girls at the time they were girls, a lot of them were underprivileged and poor and came from bad homes and disadvantaged in some way, shape, or form. They didn't really have any sort of representation. And they're, in the eyes of the Constitution, they're equal to Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, their rights are just as equal as his, but yet nothing happened for them. And it's just the inequality of the justice system was... And like I said, this underground subculture of rich people pulling things off for each other was really what I got out of this.
And one of the girls said that after she told her story to the cops, like It was repeatedly referred to as like an underage sex abuse pyramid scheme, mm-hmm. because he would get one girl to come to him, and then he would say, hey, if you would bring me one of your friends, I'll give you $200 on top of the $200 I'm giving her. So they would just keep bringing more and more people because they needed the money, because they weren't from, you know, families that were well off or anything.
Yeah.
And one of the girls said that when she told the police her story, like, and you could hear it, they had the recording, the cops kind of came down hard on her, and they're like, so you brought like 50 mm-hmm. of your friends to this guy and he abused them all. And it's like, but she's the victim,
right?
Like, she's the victim. Like, and that's what happens is, you know, the people who are the victims are the ones who get thrown in jail. Like, the reporters get thrown in jail.
Yeah.
The whistleblowers get thrown in jail. Right. And the people at the top just keep doing what they're doing.
Just keep going on and on. The thing that I don't understand about this kind of case and the in sexual assaults in general, and I know we've talked about this in the past, but like, how, what's the percentage of lying going on here? What's the percentage of, in terms of women coming forward accusing somebody? It's got to be microscopic.
It is. It's teeny tiny.
And so why wouldn't you just believe people? I think we're turning in that direction. I think it's getting better.
I hope so.
And certainly in a lot of places, maybe not everywhere across this country, but it's one of the things that reinforced this. There was one detective who took this on in New York, and he was interviewing a lot of the girls / women, depending on what their ages were, and trying to get details out of what he did with them and all that sort of stuff. And I thought that was fantastic that he really took an interest in this. But if that happens today, that's a woman doing all those interviews.
Right.
Because he was asking all these really delicate questions and embarrassing mm-hmm. questions. And the women, to their credit, were answering, didn't seem like they were embarrassed or whatever. But it just shows you, like, this guy, this pioneer detective, I think, has since passed away, but he did a really good job at getting all these interviews on the record.
Yeah.
But now you would have a support structure a little bit, you know, an infrastructure mm-hmm. a little bit more in place, so you'd get these women more comfortable in the situation to come forward. So I don't know how many more of these things have to happen before women start getting believed. And I'm not just saying right. that because I'm sitting across from a woman and I hope that, you know,
an avowed feminist.
Yeah, somehow, some way we might go out again somewhere in society and right. go to a movie or something, like dinner. But I'm not saying it for that reason. I mean, I have two daughters, so that's part of it. But I just have never understood why in any situation, why you wouldn't believe the accuser mm-hmm. as opposed to the accused. Like, yes, innocent before guilty, that's got to be the overriding circumstance, but you've got to get all the facts first before you leap to a conclusion. It's like, well, this person's lying because of this. I mean, people handle stress in so many different ways.
Right.
And if you had such a traumatic experience in your life as to be sexually abused, like in these situations, you know, some people are just going to close all in and they're not going to give you details. Other people are going to be so traumatized, they're not going to remember the exact same, you know, the exact color of the guy's shirt or whatever
right.
happens, because you're just a horrible, horrible situation. So,
and nobody accuses somebody who says they were mugged of lying, you know?
Right. Or stealing, like, a car. Or,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or embezzlement or anything like that. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, why is this a different standard? I've never understood that. So this was a fascinating window into that. I think it could have been better. I think it could have. I was okay with the length. I don't think everything has to be 8 to 10 episodes.
Right, uh-huh.
But I agree with what you said, is that, you know, they should have had more on Epstein. I was looking for more information on him because his name is in the title of the doc.
Right.
So I would have gotten more out of it, because I don't know a lot about him, because I'm not going to read about a guy like this in court cases. I'm just gonna uh-huh. I'm gonna be interested in how things go, but I'm not really gonna read a profile on him. I'd rather see it in this kind of documentary, because I don't really want to touch this subject too much.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's why we've been kind of debating a little bit off and on all day, like, do we really podcast on
right.
this, because
right.
this is really kind of a heavy topic. There's lots of known victims and many, many more unknown victims, and this is not, hey, easy breezy, weekend,
right.
bingeable thing like White Lines. You know, this is...
We're not making pithy remarks about this one.
Right. This is real actions that had real consequences for a lot of people. It destroyed a lot of lives,
yeah.
or
yeah.
at least derailed them for a time. And, you know, that's not a thing that we can joke around about.
It's not a light subject at all. I was really impressed with the women that they showed in this show, and how strong they were. I know that was said, actually, and one of the other women said that too, but I was really impressed with how strong they were. Like, it seemed, there are a lot of women who are not in this at all, who mm-hmm. who knows what their state of mind is, but who are also victims. But I was really impressed with how they stood up for themselves, and they didn't give up.
Right.
Like the first two sisters who were involved in all this near the very beginning,
who Vanity Fair uncovered, and they weren't able to,
the Jane Does, mm-hmm. yeah, and they weren't able to verify. Like, they came forward and they were brave and everything like that. And the reporter even said that. It's like, what are we doing with all this bravery? Like, they came forward and they went on the record and they said all these things. They had never said them to anybody else. And the one sister didn't know about the other sister having these things happen to her. And the older sister had recruited the younger sister, not knowing what was going to happen. And it was just all these things. And so the strength of those women was unbelievable. And the fact that it came out in a number of times too, is that some of the women didn't know there were other women. So the fact that now they all know there's a bit of a support network there. So they're not in it alone. Like, that's mm-hmm. the terrifying thing, is this thing is happening to you. You're on the U.S. Virgin Islands somewhere, and somebody's right. attacking you in that way, and you have no way out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody else around, really. So you have no sense that this happens every week or what the frequency is. So it was, the women were there. I mean, obviously they're the stars of the documentary, and they were very brave, and they took a lot of chances doing what they did, but they were the focus of all this.
Yeah, they were.
So do you recommend this, Coco? I mean, it's not light watching. There's a lot of graphic detail.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to rate it on, like, an is this entertaining axis.
But is it worthwhile? Like, I mean,
it's, yeah, maybe it's worthwhile. I mean, you never know what's going to come out later.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think out of, it's a 4-hour thing. I think the fact that it's the victims are compelling and they have, you know, hard stories to tell and they need to be told, I think that's important. When I was rating it on CocoAndAlts.com, I gave it 3 out of 5, just because I thought it was missing a large Epstein chunk of information. But I think if you're willing to go for 4 hours, if you're looking for something that's informative, it's definitely not light. And it's definitely not something along the lines of White Lines like we watched. It's not flashy. It's not mm-hmm. About a fantastic lifestyle that you want to live yourself.
Right.
I think it's a good one, but it depends on your appetite for this kind of subject too, right?
Right. It could be very triggering if you have any sort of, like,
right.
assault or trauma background.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just 4 hours of women describing how they were assaulted,
right.
basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of them definitely are still having a hard time with it, clearly. And, you know, so that's tough to watch. So,
recommendation with a caveat, I guess.
With an asterisk.
Yeah.
Like, just beware that you're not going into Stranger Things. You're not going
right.
into...
This is not Anchorman.
Right. No, this is not some fun, frothy, lighthearted...
Nor do I think anybody would expect that. But
no,
still...
but just...
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah. So.
So on that heavy note, we keep talking about, you know, we're going to do something lighter next time. So it's my pick tonight. So maybe I'll pick like Trailer Park Boys Out of the Park,
okay.
or something like that. And we'll review that just to lighten things up a bit.
And we did do, didn't we do like a comedies podcast a while back and nobody listened to it? So that's why we're stuck on like the Nordic noir and the and the pedophile stuff, is because nobody wanted the comedy podcast.
People want the fresh content. We're giving it to you, listener, whatever you want.
We are giving it to you. We're giving it to you on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, and Google Play. Please rate and review us. And subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at CocoAndAlts.com, like Dalt said. You can leave us a DM on Facebook or Twitter. We're at CocoAndAlts. You can also email us at CocoAndAlts@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions on what you want us to review in the future, you have any feedback on any episodes you've heard so far, you just want to say hi, you want to drop me like a vegan recipe for something tasty, I'm in.
Or most important, in many of these locations, there's a picture and you can see what Coco looks like. So that will entice listener to click.
Maybe don't say that at the end of the Epstein episode.
Oh, right. Right.
So on that note.
So for another week, thanks for joining us on the podcast. I'm not Coco.
And I'm not Daltz.